that girl do her public apology yet?
Nick flinched at the question. Dina Quattlebaum had been Brenna's best friend since they started school together. They'd always been close and inseparable, until Dina got her feelings hurt over something ridiculous and had conjured a demon that had wreaked havoc on the entire school. Dina had maliciously ruined several students' reputations, including Brenna's. But worse than even that, Dina had accused Nick of attacking her, something that had landed Nick in jail and then caused her father to go Babe Ruth on him, which was what Dr. Burdett had referred to earlier when she talked about patching him up. The man had almost killed him. Luckily, the truth had come out before any real harm had been done, but the fallout was still a nasty thing they were all having to deal with at school. As the old saying went, lies traveled much faster than the truth, and the truth never caught up with a lie. He was finding that out in a wicked way. She gave her apology first thing this morning, and then they took her to jail for all the stuff she did. Dr. Burdett shook her head. That's a darn shame. I hate to see someone so young ruin their life for something as stupid as jealousy. Yes, ma'am, me too. Nick paid for the ram, but as he reached to take it, something painful stabbed him right between his eyes. He sucked his breath in sharply. Bubba frowned. You okay? Nick nodded, then shook his head. Got a weird feeling all of a sudden. Dr. Burdett stepped around the counter to look at him. What kind of feeling? Dizzy and, I don't know, just weird. She cupped his chin in her hand and angled his head down so she could study his features while she pressed the back of her other hand against his forehead.
When was the last time you ate something?
Lunch. And a bag of chips about an hour ago, Caleb added. Nick doesn't ever miss a meal or a snack. Without responding to Caleb's dry tone, she pulled a penlight out of her pocket.
Come to the back and let me take a better look at you.
Ma, he's fine.
She cast Bubba an evil glare. Michael, I have noticed that none of them fancy MIT doctorates you hold are in medicine, so if you don't mind, I don't tell you how to fix computers and do quantum physics or explain string theory, and you don't tell me how the body works and what I need to be looking at when a former patient goes pale for no apparent reason.
Yes, ma'am,
Bubba said, standing down.
Nick started for the back, then stumbled. Bubba caught him and all but carried him to a chair.
Hey, boy, you all right?
Nodding, Nick tried to get his bearings, but everything spun with a vicious frenzy. It was like time had slipped out of sync or something. Everything moved slow and fast at the same time. He heard the voices of the ether whispering all around him. Some were threatening and some were shrill. Together they made a cacophony so confusing that it only made his dizziness worse. All of a sudden, through the spinning haze, he smelled something absolutely foul. It was so bad, he choked and coughed hard. But it brought everything into sharp focus. Bubba, Caleb, Dr. Burdett, and Mark were huddled around him. Mark pulled his hand back from Nick's face.
See, duck urine isn't just zombie cover, it doubles the smelling salts.
Nick coughed even harder, then cleared his throat.
That's the nastiest crap on the planet, Mark. Please, don't ever do that again. I'd rather you shock me or shoot me, even.
Yeah,
Mark said with a twisted laugh.
But it worked, didn't it?
Nick screwed his face up in distaste while Dr. Burdett tilted his head back and passed the light over his eyes.
You're a little clammy. What did you have for lunch?
Same thing Caleb did. Meatloaf, mashed potatoes, 2 bags of corn chips, a fruit roll-up, chocolate ice cream, and a Pop-Tart.
He was pretty sure she had the same exact expression that he must have worn when he smelled the duck urine.
I'm not even going to comment. Oh, yes, I am. Boy, are you out of your ever-loving mind? What kind of bone-headed lunch is that? Is there anything even remotely nutritious in that lineup?
She looked at Caleb.
And you joined him with that?
It was good, Dr. Burdett.
It was nutritious, Nick said quickly. We had something from each food group.
She was aghast.
How do you figure?
Meatloaf for protein, fruit roll-up, the strawberry and the Pop-Tarts, and mashed potatoes for my fruits and veggies, corn chips for my grains, and ice cream for dairy. It's all good stuff.
I shudder at what they're teaching the youth of today. I can't believe the stuff you call food.
She rolled her eyes.
It's as bad as the time I caught Michael poking holes in all my biscuits and pouring syrup in them for dinner and drinking a six-pack of Coke while he did it.
I ain't know, Bubba said defensively. That was one of my best meals ever.
Only if you want to go into a diabetic coma.
Nick laughed, then sobered the moment Dr. Burdett narrowed her gaze on him.
Sorry, ma'am, but I feel a lot better now.
She appeared less than convinced.
Are you just saying that so I'll leave you alone?
No, ma'am, I really do feel normal again.
Doubt clouded her eyes.
Let me call your mama to come get you. You don't need to be walking around, right?
I can drive him, Dr. Burdett.
She frowned at Caleb.
You sure?
He nodded.
I'll be glad to. That way Mrs. Gaucher won't have to leave work and get upset.
All right.
She turned back toward Nick.
But if you start to feel anything abnormal again, call me immediately, understand?
Yes, ma'am.
Nodding, she patted Nick on the shoulder and stood back so that he could get up. Bubba handed him the small bag with Kirian's ram chip in it.
You sure you're all right?
Yeah, golden.
All right, then. Be careful.
I will.
Caleb led him out of the store and back to the sidewalk. The moment they were alone and the door was firmly closed, he faced Nick. What didn't you tell them?
Was that a trick question? You know what I didn't tell them. It felt like something was clawing inside me, trying to get out and make a Nick kebab, kind of like when my powers take hold of me and I can't control them, but it wasn't the same as that. Not really. Yeah, I don't know. It was just weird. You got any idea about what caused it?
Caleb shook his head.
Could be a lot of things. Maybe a shift in the time sequence?
A chill went down Nick's spine as he thought about Ambrose, who occasionally came from the future to help him.
How do you mean?
Unlike most of us non-human entities, the Malachi can sense whenever someone tampers with time. While we have no clue it's been altered, Malachi's will know. Or it could be the manifestation of competing powers, like a warning system to let you know that something's in town and it has the ability to bleed you. Think of it like a spidey sense.
Yeah, but he didn't want to think about that at all.
That's not comforting.
Not supposed to be.
Caleb started forward. Nick caught his arm and pulled him to a stop.
Is that it? Are those the only two things it could have been?
No. It could be Noir trying to summon you to the Nether Realm, or a fringe guard or other bounty hunter entering this plane, or walking past Bubba's store. It could have been a god popping into Sanctuary for a bite to eat, or a million other such things. Whatever it is, it's your powers attempting to charge so that you can face whatever threat might be heading your way.
Oh, goody. Just what he wanted. Someone else out to get him.
Do your powers do that too?
Caleb nodded. That gave him hope.
Then did you feel it a few minutes ago?
Nope. But all that means is whatever's after you isn't after me. Or it could be that it's not strong enough that I need to charge my powers to fight it. The warning system only goes off when you need to prepare yourself for battle.
Yeah, me. The moment Caleb finished, another foreign wave went through Nick, and with it came clarity about his friend. Something he'd never known. It was the reason Caleb's powers hadn't charged just now.
You're a demigod.
His features paling, Caleb stepped back. He narrowed his gaze in warning.
What did you say?
Nick paused as he sought the source of that revelation. But there was nothing more tangible than a feeling of certainty deep in the pit of his stomach. He knew for a fact that Caleb was part ancient god and a major one at that.
You are, aren't you? That's why you're stronger than other mid-level demons. It's why you were a general in the First War. You can siphon off your father's powers.
A shield came down around Caleb, preventing Nick from sensing anything else about him, even his mood.
You don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, right. You know better than to lie to me.
Lie detection was about the only power Nick had that never failed him. Caleb's eyes flashed bright orange in warning.
Drop the subject, Nick. Now.
Why? Why would that bother him? If Nick had the blood of a god in him, he'd dance around the block and tell everyone and their chickens, loudly. Heck, he'd probably tattoo it to his forehead. Why didn't you tell me?
Don't ask questions you don't want to know the answer to,
Caleb growled. And in that instant, Nick saw the trigger of Caleb's rage in his mind as clearly as he saw the anger on Caleb's face. Deep in the past, Caleb stood before his father, who looked so much like him that it was hard to tell them apart. But Nick knew Caleb's black battle armor that appeared to bleed on its own as camouflage so that no one would ever know if Caleb had been wounded in a fight. Caleb's black hair was longer then and fell in waves to his shoulders. A short, well-groomed beard dusted his cheeks as he confronted the god who had fathered him.
What have you done?
His father ground his teeth in an anger that rivaled Caleb's.
It's not what you think,
isn't it? You've sold out all of us, including me.
I had no choice.
Caleb laughed bitterly.
We all have choices, old man.
He raked his father with a sneer.
At least I finally know for sure where I fall in your affections. Not that I didn't before. Thanks for the rectal confirmation.
With those words, his human skin transformed to that of a demon, as if Caleb no longer wanted to claim that part of himself at all. He jammed his helm down over his head and started away, but his father caught his arm.
I do love you, Morhan.
Caleb snatched his arm free.
I am no son of yours,
he snarled between clenched teeth. So don't pretend otherwise.
I was nothing more than an unwanted byproduct of your lust for a demon who had no maternal instinct at all. You should have let her devour me the instant I was spawned, but don't worry. I won't shame you again by claiming you. As far as I'm concerned, I was born an orphan.
With that, Caleb unfurled his wings and took flight, leaving his father behind to wince in pain. Nick wanted desperately to know what his father had done to harm him, but his powers wouldn't cooperate. All he had was that tiny snippet of Caleb's past. And if he understood anything, it was paternal conflict. His relationship with his own father made Caleb's appear normal. But in the end, one thing was clear. He hated hurting his friend in any way, and nothing hurt worse than bad memories.
I'm sorry, Caleb. I won't go there again, okay? Whatever is between you and yours is between you and yours. It's none of my business.
Caleb drew a ragged breath.
You've only just discovered what it's like to be born hybrid. To feel torn between two cultures and two warring parts of yourself. That's a battle I've had my entire existence, and honestly, it sucks. It's exactly like being torn between two women. The best thing to do, kid, decide which one you want to be and ignore the other.
And if I can't?
Then you really are screwed, and you will never know any kind of peace. Split loyalties work for no one.
As Nick opened his mouth to respond, another image flashed through his mind. It was one of Caleb and six other men who stood as a formidable wall against their enemies. Ferocious power emanated from them as they waited to confront whatever was coming for them. He didn't know who those other men were, if they were demons, gods, or some other group, but it was obvious they had been brothers, if not by blood, then by bond.
Who were your allies when you fought against my father in the first war?
Caleb snorted.
I never fought against your father, Nick. I led my army against the first Malachi.
That stunned him.
But I thought...
You are a direct descendant of the firstborn, but there have been several Malachis before your father. Adarian has lived the longest out of them all. Several only lasted a handful of years, long enough to spawn a replacement, and then they were gone.
And the one thing that made those Malachis so different from Nick was that each had known who and what they were from the moment of birth. Nick was the only Malachi who'd been born thinking himself human. It was hard to wake up one day and learn that everything you thought you knew about yourself was a lie. That nothing in your past was what it seemed, or what you'd been told, that your parents weren't who and what you'd believe them to be. He was still fighting hard to wrap his mind around it most days. God, but it was impossible at times. Everything was changing so fast that it made his head spin even more than what it had done inside Bubba's store. Yesterday, he'd been a dirt-poor kid whose biggest concern was keeping his grades up and getting to school on time, walking his mom home whenever she worked late. Now, he was 2 years from graduating with a job that carried a buttload of responsibility and secrets, and while he'd thought he was the man of the house when he was a kid, he now fully understood what taking care of his mother really entailed. How her safety hinged on every decision he made. One wrong move and her life would end because of him. Not to mention, his body was changing and growing faster than he could keep up with, and if that wasn't enough, he was a dang demon half the universe wanted to hunt down and kill, including his girlfriend. And the one thing on his side? Stupid powers that were more of a detriment than help. Thanks for that, universe. Glad you have me to pick on. Closing his eyes, Nick sighed. I'm too young to deal with all this. Caleb snorted.
I know the feeling.
Yeah, right. You're thousands of years old.
I wasn't born this old, Nick. And because of my parents, I had a bounty on my head too when I was a kid. So I do know what you're feeling. And it's a hard place to call home, trust me. I've had that address every day of my life.
Wow. Caleb could actually share. This was a first. How did you survive? Nick asked him.
I had an uncle who protected me. Taught me how to fight and shield myself and powers. Most of all, he taught me how to figure out when I should engage in war and when I should walk away and let it go.
I haven't noticed you doing a lot of the latter.
Caleb laughed. We have a lot in common, Nick. Stubborn and stupid to the core of our souls.
Yeah, but was what they called a friendship enough for Nick to be able to always trust Caleb at his back? Or would Caleb one day try to kill him too? Only time would tell. Time? Ah, crap! Nick checked his watch and winced as he realized how late it had gotten. Can I catch a ride over to Kyrian's?
Sure.
Caleb led him back toward their school, where his black Porsche 911 Turbo Cabriolet was parked. It hadn't been all that long ago that Nick had been so intimidated by a car this expensive that he was scared to touch it. Funny how fast things changed. Now he was around expensive cars so much that he'd started thinking of them as normal. Who would have ever imagined that? Definitely not him. Nick opened the car door to get in and paused as he caught sight of several classmates leaving the building. Two of them called out a greeting to Caleb, who ignored them completely like he always did. Caleb hated having to play his role of Mr. Jock popularity. Everyone at school thought he was a rich kid whose parents were always out of town. If they only knew the truth, they'd probably burst into flames or have a stroke and die from disbelief. Pushing that thought aside, Nick got in and fastened his seatbelt. Try to keep it under 90, okay? Caleb laughed as he started the engine, then floored it. Nick held his breath as they took a corner so fast he was pretty sure two wheels came off the pavement. Thinking I should have grabbed a streetcar, he mumbled under his breath. Caleb downshifted. You fight armies of the damned out to slay you and my driving is what scares you? Really? I have to say that's a big affirmative. Caleb shook his head and laughed.
Don't worry, Nick. You're safe as a babe in my presence. I can't afford to let anything happen to you.
That would be more comforting if they weren't careening in and out of traffic in warp drive. What was it with immortals that they loved to speed and weave? Come to think of it, none of them had ever taken or passed a real driver's license test. Help me. The good news was that it didn't take all that long to get to Kyrian's, especially since they were traveling at the speed of sound. Nick let out a relieved breath at his safe arrival. FYI, I think I might have stained your seat. You'll probably want to clean that later. Caleb stopped the car barely a millimeter from Kyrian's locked wrought iron gate.
It's all right, I'll just buy a new one.
All right then. Hasta mañana. Nick rolled out of the car and grabbed his backpack from the floorboard. He'd barely closed the door before Caleb peeled out. He didn't know for sure what Caleb did when he wasn't around. Caleb refused to elaborate on his free time. Then again, he refused to elaborate on most things. Just like Nick's boss, Kirian, and his friend Asheron. Another thing immortals had in common, apparently.
You don't talk much about yourself either.
True. He didn't like people getting all that close to him. That way it didn't hurt so much when they left.
Maybe that was their problem, too. It made sense. An average human life was nothing when you lived forever.
Kind of like owning a Great Dane. No sooner did you get good and attached than old age claimed them and they were gone and you were all alone again.
Yeah, that would be hard to deal with.
Heaven knew Nick had a major death phobia anyway. He couldn't stand the thought of it. Trying to put it out of his mind, Nick punched the code into the gate and waited for it to open. As soon as it was wide enough, he headed up the curved driveway that led to the sprawling white antebellum mansion Kirian called home. It was an impressive place with wraparound porches up and down, the kind of house that reminded you of a wedding cake. And as he walked closer, he had another weird sensation go through him, like some out-of-body experience. He saw himself from high above in the clouds. There was no doubt that was Nick O'Shea walking, yet it seemed like some unknown character on a TV screen, like he was completely detached from his emotions and body. What is going on with me today? Thankfully, his phone buzzed in his pocket. That sensation slammed him back into his body and reality and reconnected him with his emotions. Nick pulled his phone out to see a message from Casey.
Hey, babe, I heard you guys got free early. Want to grab a bite to eat?
Nick scowled, then quickly typed a response.
I think you meant to send that to Stone.
He just reached the steps when she answered.
Ha ha, Nick. I know who I'm texting. So are you hungry? Want to hang out for a while?
Yeah, this day couldn't get any stranger. Well, barring another one of Maddox's zombie attacks or a demon assault.
Have to work. Sorry.
He'd barely sent that before she shot back another text. Dang, that girl could hammer out her words.
Call me when you get off. I'll be here.
Nick was so stunned that he would have walked straight into the front door had Rosa not opened it first. About even in height to Bubba's mama, Rosa had black hair tinged with gray. In her early 40s, she was Kirian's housekeeper and more like another mother to Nick.
You have a problem, Mr. Nick?
He always loved the way she said his name with her heavy Spanish accent. It was so cool.
No, Rosa, I'm just trying to figure out a girl from school.
She laughed and stepped back so that he could enter the house.
There's no figure when you speak of women, mijo. We are mysterious creatures.
Yes, you are.
He slid his phone into his pocket.
Is Kirian awake yet?
She closed the door and pulled the cloth from her shoulder.
See, he is in the shower.
Awesome.
Rosa scowled at him.
Do you feel all right, Nick? You look a bit pale.
That was another thing about Rosa. You couldn't get anything past her.
Yes, ma'am, just had a bad day.
She gave him a sympathetic pout.
Would the chocolate chips help you feel better?
He immediately flashed a grin at her.
Ah, Miss Rosa, you are a godsend. Yes, that would help turn my day around exponentially.
Rising up on her tiptoes, she ruffled his hair.
They're in the kitchen, mijo. Still warm and gooey. Go grab yourself some.
Muchas gracias.
De nada.
With quick steps, Nick ran to the back of the house, then paused as he felt a presence there that wasn't normal.
Rosa?
He called out.
Is Asheron here?
He always left an odd feeling in the air.
No, just you, me, and Kirian.
Weird.
Okay, thanks.
Still, he couldn't shake the sensation as he made his way to the kitchen counter to grab a handful of Rosa's delicious cookies. The smell was soothing, but he couldn't get over the odd tingling. It made the skin on the back of his neck crawl. He swallowed a cookie and looked around the room, seeking the source of his discomfort.
What the... You are going to die.
The disembodied voice that came from the hall was gender neutral. His heart hammering, Nick searched everywhere, trying to find the source of it. There was nothing. He was completely alone in the kitchen.
"Who are you?"
he shot back in a low tone so that Rosa wouldn't hear it and think he was nuts.
"I'm a harvester, and you are my bounty."
Chapter 4.
"Bring it home, punk," Nick snarled at the voice, dropping his backpack to the floor of the office he shared with Rosa. He braced himself for the fight. "This Cajun don't go down for nothing. You think you can take me? You better bring some friends." The door behind him opened. Nick spun around, ready to battle whatever was there. As soon as he saw who was entering, he sucked his breath in sharply. It was a giant of a man who stood almost 7 feet in height, one who had on a pair of opaque sunglasses that concealed his eyes from view. Wearing black on black and with long purple hair, he appeared at first glance no older than 20, but the ferocity of his presence told everyone who came into contact with him that he was much more than what he seemed. That he was badass enough to take down anyone dumb enough to challenge him. And thankfully, he was one of Nick's best friends. Nick growled at him.
"Dang it all, Ash, you scared the crap out of me. Could you please knock once in a while?"
A knock sounded on the door that was open behind Asheron's gargantuan form.
"Better?"
Not really, it was kind of creepy. But at least he knew about Asheron's unearthly powers and offbeat humor, so the disembodied knock wasn't that much of a surprise. As the leader of the Dark Hunters and oldest member of their crew, Ash's psychic abilities were fierce and scary, the stuff people had nightmares about. But Nick feared almost nothing, and Ash was definitely no longer on that list. Rolling his eyes, he sighed, "Little late there with the knock, buddy?"
"Sorry, I didn't realize you'd be so jumpy. I forget the teenagers are like puppies, high-strung and nervous for no apparent reason. I guess we're all lucky you didn't soil the carpet, huh?"
"Ha ha. More like you, T-Rex, were born before doors were invented and don't know proper protocol. Just to clarify, you knock before you come into a room." Ash let out an aggravated breath as he swiped his brow with his middle finger.
"For the record, we did have doors 11,000 years ago. Like many other things you guys erroneously take credit for, you did not invent them."
Nick snorted. "Uh-huh, that's what all ancient people say, so what are you doing here?" Ash tucked his hands into the pockets of his motorcycle jacket that had a skull and crossbones painted across the back of it.
"Responding to that wigged-out text you sent me from school, why are you suddenly curious about demonology?"
There was something about Ash so trustworthy that Nick almost told him everything. But Ambrose had been emphatic that he keep Asheron out of his life as much as possible, for Ash's sake as much as his own. And while Nick didn't really trust his future self, he had no reason to doubt Ambrose's warnings, especially since Ambrose knew the future and exactly what would happen to Nick if he didn't change things. So he opted for a partial truth. "We had one loose in my school, so I thought, given that I'm now in the middle of this oh-so-fun world of yours, I might ought to educate myself on it in case another one decides to use St. Richard's or me for a playground. So, do you know any good books about it?" Asheron laughed, deep in his throat.
"Now there's something I never thought to hear coming out of your mouth. At least, not unless it involved hentai or manga."
Nick slapped his knee in a grandiose, sarcastic gesture. "You're so hilarious. You know, if this whole Damon slang gig doesn't work out for you, you should really consider being a comedian. The bright Barney hair color would just add to the overall entertainment factor." Asheron smiled, flashing a tiny bit of his fangs. Over 11,000 years old, Ash knew pretty much everything about anything. But unlike most of Nick's teachers, he wasn't arrogant or condescending about it. And when he explained the past to you, it was actually interesting, especially since you knew he'd lived through it and was speaking from personal experience.
"And one day, kid, that sense of humor of yours is gonna get you eaten by something foul."
"So they keep telling me." With an expression that said he was less than amused, Ash ran his thumb along the edge of his lips.
The best book I know is bound in human flesh and written in blood. Not sure you'd want it if I gave it to you, and even then, it's written in cuneiform.
Cune-what?
Exactly my point, Nick. Cuneiform. Ancient Sumerian. Not exactly something they teach in high school these days.
That figured. Nick scowled at him. What good is it, then?
A lot. It's the definitive book on all subspecies of Eurasian and African demon kin. There's not a breed on those continents that isn't well documented, right down to how to trap and kill them, but it has nothing about American, Australian, or Antarctican demons.
That last one floored him. Was Ash serious or joking again? They have demons in Antarctica?
Yeah,
Ash breathed.
It wasn't always covered by ice. That was just a precaution when they buried them. Not to mention there are a few sunken small continents around it, such as Mu, Asmaya, Lumeria, Vlonderen, and the aptly named Setanzis, which translates to the Isle of Demons. There's a really good reason no human wants to live on the South Pole, and why many have never returned from their trips there.
Nick narrowed his gaze at Asheron. You're screwing with me, aren't you?
No. There's a lot of human history that wasn't written down. Sometimes for good reasons. And there are tons of things the powers that be don't want humanity to remember or rediscover. And even what's written isn't always right. People skew things all the time to make themselves look better.
Such as?
Well, if you ask the god Apollo what happened to Atlantis, he'll tell you he sank it. Plato, on the other hand, blames the sinking on Poseidon. The Ketua say it was a blonde-haired demon who annihilated it.
And the truth? Nick asked. Asheron shrugged.
No. I was temporarily dead when my home was sucked into the ocean. I keep watching the History Channel, hoping for enlightenment, but so far, nada.
Nick laughed at his dry tone. You're lying to me. Asheron arched a brow.
What makes you think that?
I don't know. It's a feeling I have that tells me you know exactly what happened to your homeland, but that you don't want to share. Asheron's stance and expression gave nothing away. Man, to have those evil poker face powers.
What can I say? I have a long history of not playing well with others.
Knowing Asheron was even less likely to share than Caleb, Nick changed the subject. So, how many classifications of demon are there, anyway?
Thousands. Every culture has its own group.
You can't be more specific? Ash shrugged.
If I thought about it, but really, who cares?
I do. So what's the exact number?
9,212 subcategories.
Now that was a lot, and Nick was one of them. No, Nick was the king of them, or would be one day. But Asheron didn't know that, and Nick wasn't about to enlighten him, especially since Asheron made a habit out of killing one particular demon class of beings. Still, it was impressive that Asheron could pull the exact number out of the ether. His powers really were terrifying. Do you know them all?
Not personally. Contrary to what you think, not all preternatural beings hang out at the local supernatural pub looking for humans and dates.
Nick let out an irritated breath. That wasn't what I meant. Do you know all the different kinds?
Yes. And we've talked about this before. Would you like the list alphabetically, regionally, or chronologically?
Nick rolled his eyes again. I would accuse you of being sarcastic, but I have a feeling you actually could name them all in those orders.
Yes, I can, but that being said, I don't know everything about all of them. Some of them aren't in the human realm, so I've never had the chance to cross their path. Some are extinct and were so even when I was born. Others are major pains in my posterior more times than they should be.
A weird chill went down Nick's spine at that last bit. It was something Ash said about him. A lot. Could Ash possibly know what he was? No, there was no way. Ash wouldn't have been so lackadaisical about it if he knew. In fact, given his devotion to humans, Asheron would most likely kill him if he ever learned Nick was a Malachi.
Asheron? I didn't know you were still in town.
Ash turned as Kyrian joined them in Nick and Rosa's office. At 6'5", Kyrian didn't look up at many men, but Ash was one of the few. Blonde, well-muscled, and with features a cover model would envy, he had a presence every bit as fierce as Asheron's. His blonde curls were slicked back and wet from his shower, but he was dressed in his usual all-black, high-fashion designer style. In his human life, Kyrian had been a renowned Greek prince and general. That aura of commanding nobility still bled from every precise gesture he made. Even his stance said, "Bow down before me or get your throat cut." Ash shook Kyrian's hand.
"Given the strange vibe we encountered last night, I decided to stay on for a bit longer."
Nick frowned.
"What strange vibe?"
Kyrian rubbed at his shoulder as if he'd been injured the night before.
"We found a group of daemons who actually fought back with a great deal of skill, instead of running away like they normally do."
"Did you get them?"
"No,"
Asheron answered before Kyrian had a chance.
"Which is another reason I'm staying a little longer than planned."
Kyrian glared at Asheron.
"You know, Asheron, I led entire armies up against Rome's finest. I think I can handle this without a babysitter."
"And when you were going up against Rome, I dare say you had more than you, Xander and Talon, in your army?"
"I really hate it when you use logic against me."
Kyrian crossed his arms over his chest.
"Xander?"
Nick asked Asheron, wondering about the unfamiliar name.
"Another Dark Hunter here in New Orleans."
Nick gaped. "There's a third Dark Hunter, and you're just now telling me this?"
"We actually have four here," Kyrian said, "but Rogue speaks even less than Xander does." Nick looked back and forth between them.
"And why am I just now finding out about this?"
Ash shrugged.
"Need to know. And you didn't."
"Yeah. It said a lot about how secretive they were and the fact that, as Kyrian's human squire, Nick was supposed to be privy to all Dark Hunter details, especially those that concerned or mattered to him. Aren't you guys afraid I'd see one of them and stake them by mistake?"
"Nope,"
Ash said.
"They're not blonde. That's the only reason we told you about Talon. We figured if you ran across Xander or Kit, you'd think they were some other species."
That was the thing about daemons. Since they didn't intermingle with other species, they were all natural blondes.
"Who's Kit?" Nick asked with a frown. "Is that another one?"
Kyrian shook his head. "Rogue's real name isn't Rogue. His parents weren't that cruel. It's Christopher Boffy, or Kit."
"Why does he go by Rogue, then? Is he an X-Men fan?"
Ash sighed.
"FYI, I wouldn't crack that joke around him. I doubt his high surliness would be amused, and he tends to be fast with a blade to the throat. Back in the 18th century, he was an English highwayman known as the Black Rogue. Rogue, for short."
"Oh. So, Asheron," Kyrian said, hijacking their conversation, "what happened to your car? I saw the busted fender on it. How unlike you to crash into anything."
Nick cringed as Asheron turned toward him with an arched brow.
"Hey now," Nick said, holding his hands up in defense of himself. "It was not my fault. I was minding my own business when that trash can went suicidal, came out of nowhere, and jumped in front of the car."
"It was on the curb, Nick,"
Ash said dryly.
"Along with a number of screaming pedestrians, running for their lives."
"That's your story. I'm sticking to mine. And there ought to be a law about homicidal trash cans and fines for people who just put them on the street. They're really dangerous."
"Just saying."
Kyrian shook his head.
"And you wonder why I haven't volunteered to teach him how to drive." "I know why you haven't volunteered. I, on the other hand, need a psyche valve for being so stupid."
"No comment, for I have never been quite so stupid as to intentionally insult you."
Kyrian pegged Nick with a grimace.
"So, kid, did you get—"
"You're right here, boss."
Knowing what Kyrian wanted without his finishing the sentence, Nick pulled the ram out of his pocket.
"I'm gonna install it first thing. I also texted Kel about your boots, and he said that his squire mailed them back yesterday, but it'll be a week on your sword. He's waiting for a shipment of the titanium he uses to smelt the blades, so then I checked with Liza to see what she had in inventory. She said that she has a smaller short sword if you want to try it while you wait for your replacement. If you're interested, I can pick that up before you head out tonight, and I asked Kel to make 4 more swords as backups so that you won't have to wait in the future should your primary and secondary get busted. Kyrian inclined his head to Asheron.
Worth every penny of his salary.
Yeah, I'm thinking about cloning him. We could make a killing selling Nick PAs.
Kyrian laughed, then gave a nod to Nick.
I shall leave you to your duties and go work out until the sun goes down. If you'd like to join me in a bit, I can show you more sword fighting techniques.
And with that, he quit the room. Asheron returned to their previous discussion.
So, is there any demon you wanted to know about in particular?
Don't do it.
But before his common sense could prevail over his stupidity, he blurted out the one thing he wanted to know most. Ever heard of a Malachi? Asheron's jaw went slack, thus confirming he had more than a working knowledge of Nick's species.
Where did you hear that term?
Yeah, okay. It was a touchy subject for Asheron, too. The demon at my school mentioned one. You know anything about them?
More than I want to.
Meaning? Ash did what he did best. He diverted a personal question into a generic one.
Amalekai is one of the oldest demons in existence. There's only one left, so it's not likely you'll ever come across him.
If only he was that lucky. Now, to test exactly how much knowledge Ash had of Nick and his father. Do you know where he is? Asheron shook his head.
No one does. He escaped from his master centuries ago and has been in hiding ever since.
Nick had to give his father credit. He might be a first-rate jerk, but he knew how to shield himself. Do you know how he came into being? Ash frowned.
You seem to be a little more than just passingly curious.
I am. I want to know why the demon was talking about him. Is there something really special about a Malachi?
Yeah, if you want to seriously mangle people or end the world as we know it, he's the one to summon. He was the first of the demonic destroyers, and his breed fathered many of the subsequent and best-known evil demons. Luckily, none of the children possess the powers of their fathers. Rather, they're all watered-down versions of the Malachi.
Really? That wasn't what Nick had been told. Ash nodded.
The only exception is the original Malachi bloodline. The firstborn alone can father a child even more powerful than he is.
All right, that explained Nick's powers and why they were so dangerous. Do you know why? Nick asked.
Not really, but I suspect it has to do with the fact that he, unlike the others of his kind, was born from a goddess who had an affair with a Sephiroth.
What's a Sephiroth? Nick already knew, but if he didn't ask, Asheron might become suspicious again.
They were consorts and soldiers of the primal gods, but they were never supposed to breed with them.
Then why did they? Asheron shrugged.
The goddess wanted a baby, and she wanted it to be powerful, but not torn by pantheon politics, so she conceived a child with her Sephiroth, who was also a demigod.
What made the Malachi evil? Ash paused before he answered.
While he was born from a mother who wielded dark powers, his father was born of light, so he had a 50-50 shot as to which side he'd fall on. Some say he was decent enough until the first War of the Gods. To end that war and save the world, the original gods forged a truce that required both the light and dark powers to destroy what remained of their armies. Unwilling to kill her own son, the goddess struck a bargain to spare one Sephiroth and one Malachi. So all of them were put to death except the Sephiroth, who had betrayed his people and her son. Then her son became infused with hatred and turned psychotic when he was ordered by the light gods to kill the Malachi female he'd hidden from execution.
He loved her? Asheron nodded. That gave Nick hope. I didn't think they could love.
You can't really hate without it. And Monacribos worshipped his beloved Rubati. But when he refused to end her life, the gods tricked him into it. As she lay dying in his arms, she confessed to him that she was pregnant with his child, and that by his own actions, he'd killed them both. He begged the gods, and in particular his mother, to save them. But she couldn't do it without restarting the war they'd just ended. Instead, she made it so that he could have more children. But if they were born with his Malachi abilities to keep with the truce she'd agreed to, he would have to die by their 10th birthday, or whenever they came into their powers.
Man, it sucked to be a Malachi. I am never going to have kids. How did he become a tool for evil?
He was tricked into killing the woman he loved, Nick, and his unborn child. The guilt and grief drove him mad and poisoned his blood with hatred and venom. And that's how you know a Malachi when you come across one. Unless they're using their powers to conceal what they are, they don't bleed red. A full-blown Malachi bleeds black.
That was something to remember. So far, he was red-blooded.
Good.
There was still hope for him. Does it only turn black when they go evil? Ash nodded. Now Nick knew what to look for. That actually helped a great deal. Next question, do they have to go evil?
That is the question, isn't it? Are we pawns to or masters of our own destinies? Every being has to make that choice for him or herself.
So it's possible for Malachi to be good?
In theory. As with all other species, it depends on his strength of character and the decisions he makes.
For the first time in months, Nick had real hope. Ambrose was right. He could avoid the destiny that awaited him. He didn't have to become a cold-blooded killer after all. Awesome.
But,
Asheron continued,
it's not easy to go against your nature, especially when you're a creature of destruction. One bad temper outburst, and you lose all humanity. You say and do things you don't mean to, and it's too late to undo them. Creatures like the Malachi have a harder time than others keeping their noses clean and not giving in to the darkness that's forever seducing them.
Nick scowled. You sound like you have personal experience with that.
We all have demons inside us, Nick. The Salagi have an old saying. Every heart holds two wolves. One is the white wolf, who is made up of love, kindness, respect, decency, compassion, and all the things that are good in life. The black wolf is born of jealousy, hatred, pettiness, prejudice, vindictiveness, and all the poisons of the human personality. The two constantly war with each other for dominance, and one day one wolf will overtake and devour the other.
Yeah, but which one?
Always the one you feed, kid. You feed good to it, and the white one grows. You feed evil, and the black wolf devours. But in the end, you alone make the choice of which wolf you nurture. And that's true of every species and race.
Nick nodded. I can overcome.
No, he would overcome.
His father and birth didn't have to define him after all. He was the one in control of himself, no one else. Thanks, Ash. You've given me a lot to think about.
No problem. If you have any other questions, you know how to reach me.
Ash turned to leave. Wait, Nick stopped him. I do have one more. Have you ever heard of a harvester?
As in someone who pulls vegetables out of a garden?
Ash asked. Nick rolled his eyes. No, like something that goes after demons.
Not per se. There are all kinds of creatures who hunt demons for different reasons. It really depends on the demon and its country of origin, as well as that of the hunter. And, of course, you have the bounty hunters, which are a separate species entirely.
Nick didn't like the sound of that. How so?
If a demon breaks a law from its pantheon or another, or if someone or something wants to own it or control it, they can offer up a reward for either the demon's capture or death, at which point the bounty hunters come out in force.
Great. Just what he wanted to hear. More creatures out to kill him. Ye flippin' haw. Would someone ever hunt a Malachi?
Oh, yeah. Everyone hunts the Malachi. He is the grand prize of all time. There's not a demon in existence that carries a heftier price on its head than he does. Not to mention, if you enslave the Malachi, you have absolute evil at your disposal, and there's nothing you can't conquer.
Oh, great. Slavery. And here Nick thought being Kyrian's squire was inhibiting and degrading. How do you enslave a Malachi? He asked, wanting to know what to avoid.
With a really big army.
I'm serious, Ash. He flashed a taunting grin.
You'd have to weaken him first.
And you do that how? Ash scowled.
Why are you so intent on this?
Nick didn't dare tell him the truth. Scholarly curiosity. You talk about the ultimate evil, I want to know how to defeat it, because you know how my luck runs. And in case it goes south one night when you're not around to help me fight, I'd like to know how to hurt it. Ash arched a shocked brow.
Well, since scholarly curiosity is such a novelty for you.
Nick ignored his sarcasm.
Easiest way is if he has a son destined to inherit his powers. Put them together. The younger Malachi starts sucking the power out of him immediately. But the drawback to that is once the father's dead, the child will then have his powers and his father's. So, if you're smart, you'll kill one and enslave the other before the child develops fully. You might not have as strong a Malachi that way, but you will have one, and not die in the process.
Yeah, that definitely wasn't appealing. So, whatever he did, he couldn't let anyone get him in the same room with his father again, no matter what. And the hardest way? Nick asked.
You go full on and try to collar him. Then good luck with that.
Nick frowned. I don't understand. Collar him how?
The three primal gods who once controlled him have a special collar that restricts his powers, and it keeps him from harming them. That was the slavery he escaped. You get the collar, which the gods who own it have to allow you to do, and you place it on his neck before he kills you. That's definitely the hardest way.
Acheron paused.
So, are you writing a book with all of this?
Nick laughed nervously. No, but I think I will use it for my next D&D quest. How cool would that be, huh? Acheron shook his head.
Happy dragon hunting, kid. Don't get lost in the labyrinth.
As Ash left, Nick headed upstairs to install the RAM in Kyrian's computer, while his thoughts churned over Ash's information. It was a lot to chew on and made him wish he had Acheron's knowledge base. What would it be like to have the brain of an encyclopedia? Live long enough and you'll have that answer too. True. Ambrose was just like Acheron. He knew everything, past, present, and future. As Nick reached the staircase, he hesitated. An odd electrical sensation went through him. It felt like someone was watching his every move. Rosa? She didn't answer, which meant it wasn't her. Kyrian? Again, no answer. Nick took a step, then paused. Harvester? Deep in his mind, he heard a sinister laugh that made him jump. Yeah, okay. Creepy didn't even come close to describing what he felt. There was a chill to his blood that rushed through him and made the hair on his arm stand up again. What are you? He breathed.
Death.
The whisper was so faint that at first he thought he imagined it. Yeah, right.
I happen to be on a first-name basis with Death, and you're not him, buddy.
He's not the only one, and he's not the one who's come for you. Your life will be mine soon.
Instead of scaring him, that threat set fire to his temper. No one threatened Nick Gaucher. I'm not afraid of you. You want to fight? Bring it. Something struck the wall by his face, hard. It was so close to him that whatever it was grazed his nose. In spite of his bravado, that actually scared him blind. Hard to fight something when you couldn't see it. Jackrabbiting up the stairs, he went into Kirian's training room instead of his office. Nick slammed the door and threw himself against it, arms wide, to keep it shut. Kirian looked up from his punching bag with a curious brow. He stepped away from it.
You're right, kid.
No, but he had too much dignity to admit that out loud.
Question, is this house haunted?
With an even deeper scowl, Kirian shook his head.
No, believe me. Before any Dark Hunter moves into a new location, it is thoroughly checked for any and all ghosts.
There was another thing Nick hadn't been told. How much were they holding back? Really? Why?
We're soulless creatures, Nick. So those who have souls and no bodies tend to want to take up residence inside us. It's actually not hard for them to take over. That's why Dark Hunters don't go into cemeteries. It's too dangerous for us, and no one wants a possessed Dark Hunter on the loose.
That added another chill to him. Can demons possess Dark Hunters?
No. They're not the same thing as a human ghost. Whenever they use those powers against us, it conflicts with ours and backfires on them. It was a safeguard Artemis put in place to keep the living daemons from taking us over and controlling us.
Okay.
Kirian returned to punching his heavy, weighted bag.
Did you get my RAM installed?
No, not yet. I'll go do it.
But Nick didn't want to leave the safety of Kirian's presence. Unfortunately, he didn't have any choice. Not without looking even more ridiculous to his boss, and a total weenie to boot. Sighing, he forced himself to leave and head back down the hall to Kirian's office. As soon as he was inside, he locked the door, just in case. Then rethought the action, since Kirian would think him nuts if he found it that way. Nick unlocked it, and still the feeling of being watched stayed with him.
Whatever it is, it's still here.
Aggravated at himself for being chicken, Nick pulled the case off Kirian's PC. He set the RAM on the desk, then reached into his back pocket to pull out his grimoire. The size of a small paperback novel, it had been a gift from Ambrose to help him understand some of the madness that surrounded him and to answer some of the other questions that came up.
All right, Nashira, Nick said in a low tone. Talk to me. What the hell is watching me?
He slid his knife out of his pocket, opened the book, and pricked his finger, allowing three drops of blood to touch a blank page.
Redania Arcule,
he whispered, waking the female spirit who lived inside the enchanted pages. The moment he finished speaking, his blood began swirling until it formed words.
Do not fear that which cannot be seen, for they are lost in between. Tis the ones who come alive that your blood will allow to thrive.
Nick snorted at the cryptic stanzas. Not really useful, Nashira? Doesn't answer my question? His blood crawled over to the next page.
Answer, answer, you always say, but it doesn't work that way. In time, the truth you shall find, and then you will understand my rhyme.
I'm such a masochist even trying to talk to you.
Underneath the words, a picture of an obscene gesture formed. Oh, very nice, Nashir, very nice.
Wherever did you learn that?
In your pocket I reside, ever privy to your deride, but more than that, I can see, and that includes bathroom stall graffiti.
Nick screwed his face up in distaste.
Oh, my God, no. Tell me you haven't been spying on me in the restroom, you perv.
Calm yourself, you evil troll. My job is not to console,
But if it is privacy you seek, leave me in your backpack, so I can't peek.
Now he understood why other people got so aggravated with his attitude disorder. He wanted to strangle his book. Or burn it. Where were Bradbury's firemen when you needed them? Thanks for the comfort, hon. Appreciate it. Nick returned the grimoire to his pocket and finished sliding the RAM into Kirian's PC. But as he did so, he mulled over Nashira's words. Do not fear what cannot be seen. They are lost in between. What did that mean? Was the entity just messing with his head? Kirian had told him it couldn't be a ghost in the house, which left a lot of other possibilities, none of which were good for his health or sanity. Stop dwelling on it, you're safe. Determined to ignore the weird, icky feeling in his gut, Nick started for the door. Just as he reached the center of the room, he heard something snap. Pausing, he looked around for the source of the sound. An instant later, the huge chandelier over his head fell down on him. Chapter 5. Nick jumped back, narrowly escaping the chandelier arms, but his foot caught in the fringe of the Persian carpet, sending him to the ground as it crashed down beside him. Shards of crystal and glass showered his body and hair. He barely had time to turn his head away and shield his eyes. The door burst open. Nick? Lowering the arm he had over his face to protect it, he opened his eyes to find a sweating Kirian towering over him, pulling off his boxing gloves. Nick shook his head to loosen shards from his hair. Yeah, I'm all right. With an expression that said he wasn't buying it, Kirian knelt down to investigate Nick's condition. Gently, he took Nick's chin in his hand and examined him. What happened?
No idea. I heard something snap, and the next thing I know, your light fixture tried to kill me. I saw my whole life flash before my eyes, boss. It was horrific. I haven't done anything to regret yet, and it's been way too brief. I at least want a license before I check out, you know?
Kirian rolled his eyes.
Yeah, you're all right. Thank the gods, I'd hate to have your mother coming after me again because I let you get hurt on my watch.
He helped Nick to his feet. Then he went to study the chandelier remains. Nick paused at the sight of it all over the room. He'd never seen anything splinter into so many pieces. He was still dusting fragments off his clothes and hair.
I hope that wasn't expensive.
Probably around $60,000 to $80,000.
Nick sucked his breath in sharply.
I hope you mean Jamaican dollars and not U.S. Dude, seriously? It's a light fixture, not a supercar or a house.
Kirian picked through some of the broken pieces with the toe of his boot.
Quit hyperventilating. It came with the house, but it is an antique Waterford crystal chandelier. Back in the day, this room was a formal ballroom, and this was its showpiece.
Oh.
Still, who paid that for a light? Kirian looked up at the ceiling, where the silk cord hung from the ornate medallion like a jungle snake.
I guess the chain wore out. I should have had it checked.
He met Nick's wide-eyed stare.
Call for an electrician to look into it and see if any of the wiring poses a shock or fire hazard, and make an appointment for him to install another one as soon as he can, and to check the rest of the fixtures in the house.
He said that like they grew on trees. Where do I get a chandelier? Kirian gave him a dry stare.
We live in New Orleans, Einstein. You can't blow your nose on Royal Street that your germs won't land on a crystal chandelier in an antique store. Just pick one that's roughly the same size and design.
Nick returned Kirian's stare with one equally insulting.
You know, boss, while I realize it wouldn't pose a problem for you, the cost of one of these definitely exceeds my card limit. How you want me to pay for it? 'Cause, no offense, I ain't that good looking.
Oh yeah, that was an awesomely vicious look.
I'll have you added to my Amex account, and they'll overnight a card for you.
Limit?
Not one, but don't go hog wild. While your mother scares me, I do know how to bury bodies in places where they'll never be found.
Rosa rushed into the room and gaped at the mess.
Madre de Dios, what happened?
Nick pointed at the chandelier remains.
It tried to turn me into a pancake.
She grabbed him into a fierce hug.
Mijo, are you hurt? It didn't hit you, did it?
It just assaulted my ego. Physically, I'm good.
No,
she snapped.
You're bleeding.
Nick's eyes widened. Bleeding where?
You cut your cheek, Kirian answered. It's not bad, though.
Nick gaped at him. Since when is bleeding ever a good thing? Kirian made a sound of disgust. Rosa ignored him as she draped her arm over Nick's shoulders.
Come downstairs, Nick. Let me tend you.
Yes, ma'am.
And don't bleed on my floors,
Kirian called after him. Nick couldn't let that pass. He stuck his head back in the door.
Don't worry, boss. It's the counters and rugs I'm going for.
Dodging out of the room before Kirian forgot about his fear of his mother, Nick followed Rosa to the stairs. But he couldn't shake the bad feeling inside him that the source of the disembodied voice had a lot of power. Enough to almost drop a chandelier on me. Yeah, that had been a little too close. He'd report it to Caleb later. Maybe C might have some insight as to what could have done that to him. Maybe I shouldn't walk home. If the Harvester could get to him here, where Kirian had all kinds of protection against supernatural beings, it'd be 1,000 times easier to assault him on the street, where there was nothing. Rosa led him into the kitchen and sat him on a raised stool at the breakfast bar while she went to the cabinet that held Kirian's first aid supplies. She came back with an alcohol swipe, Neosporin, and Band-Aids. As she tended him, his thoughts spun with possibilities about who would be after him with such viciousness. And no matter how he looked at it, he kept coming back to one name. Nakoda. Who else would have access to Kirian's house when it was kept guarded and shielded? For all he knew, she was the Harvester and was using that just to screw with his head. His mother had always warned him that there was nothing more lethal on the planet than a woman with a broken heart, or one who thought a guy had done her wrong. They would use a guy's faults to justify any action they took against him, even handing the husband who adored them over to his worst enemies. And look at Mark. His last girlfriend had piled everything of his on the front lawn and torched it. Then she'd keyed his car and posted vicious things about him online. Yeah, who else would want to drop a 200-pound crystal chandelier on him for no good reason? That had crazy ex-girlfriend written all over it. The more he thought about it, the more it made complete sense. This was how she was going to kill him after all. Torture him until he was dead. Make him think he was crazy. Figures. I would get the nutty girlfriend with the epic psychic powers. And he was sure she would make him pay dearly before she finished him off. This is going to be so bad. Over the next few hours, while he went about his job, Nick was extremely skittish. Any noise made him jump like a three-tailed cat in a rocking chair factory. Kirian had a lot of chandeliers in his house, and the one in the foyer was truly frightening in size. Given how much the one that had almost squashed him weighed, he didn't even want to contemplate the weight of that sucker. Insult to injury, he cut his hand while cleaning the mess of it up, too. Now he looked like a mummy reject with the bandage on his cheek and the gauze wrapped around his hand and fingers. Thanks, Cody. Paybacks sucked, and she was the queen of doling them out. As Nick gathered his school books to head home, Rosa rejoined him in their shared office.
Mijo, there is a girl I do not know at the front door. She says she come to pick you up and drive you home.
Nick scowled. It wasn't Cody. To his knowledge, she didn't have a license or a car. Could it be Brenna? Was she old enough to drive yet? Unsure of who was waiting for him, he slung his backpack over his shoulder.
Thanks, Rosa. Have a good night.
You too. See you tomorrow.
Hasta mañana.
Reluctantly, Nick headed for the front door. He opened it slowly, dreading what might be standing on the other side. To his complete shock, it was Casey. She gasped as soon as she saw him.
Oh my God, Nick, what happened to you? Were you in a wreck or something?
Hi, Casey. Not a wreck, just real clumsy today. Yeah, so no one would ever accuse him of being suave and articulate, especially not around the female species. It seemed Cody wasn't the only one who could render him incoherent. Apparently, it was all females of his age group.
Great, I'll die an old man alone, by myself. Awkward silence hung between them until Nick cleared his throat. What are you doing here? You're not stalking me, are you?
Hardly. You said you were going to work tonight, so I thought I'd give you a ride home.
She held her keys up to show him the pink furball keychain.
Surely you'd rather ride with me than on a streetcar, right?
Not really. The streetcar didn't make him nervous, nor did he feel like a loser geek there, but he wasn't about to tell her that and up his Nimrod quotient for the day. If the captain of the cheerleaders offered to take you home, the correct answer was always, sure, that'd be nice, thanks. She smiled, but the strange thing was it didn't make his stomach flutter the way Cody's smile always did. I am not right. Only a real idiot moron would pine for a woman who'd been sent to kill him.
Color me idiot moron.
Truth be told, Casey really was the hottest girl in school. He should be thrilled she was even deigning to talk to him. But then she was also the most screwed up. She had to be to play ping-pong relationship all the time with Stone. One minute she was all over him, and the next she was chewing him out and storming off, then coming on to Nick, only to go back to Stone. It was enough to make a man dizzy. With bouncing steps, she led him down the stairs and out to the street where her car was parked. Nick slowed down as he saw some vintage something that reminded him of a mouse. It was even the same pink as her keyring. All it needed was ears and a tail to make the image even more accurate. Heck, the front end looked like it already had a set of whiskers.
What is this?
She grinned.
1972 Karmann Ghia convertible. Couldn't you just die? It's the cutest thing ever. I love this car. It's fully restored and like driving a time capsule or something.
It was pretty awesome. I never heard of one before.
It's a Volkswagen. Now get in and be careful with the interior. I don't want it damaged.
Wow, that was a first. A girl who treasured her car. Maybe they had something in common after all. Not that he had a car, but he did love and appreciate